This is Columbia Morning at News Talk 1400 KFRU. We're pleased to welcome into the studio the president of the University of Missouri System, Moon Choi. Thank you for coming, Dr. Choi. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for inviting me.
We have so much to talk about. I'm just prone to jump right into things.
Please do.
My first question has to do, and I'm not sure how involved you were in any kind of conversation between MU Healthcare and Boone Hospital Center. Were you, and can you say anything about what is now the situation of putting on pause any conversation between those two groups?
Well, thank you. Yes, I've been intimately involved since my arrival about 10 months ago. And we feel, as part of MU Health, that this was a partnership negotiation that was made in good faith by both parties and wanted to provide, as a result of the partnership, outstanding health care at very affordable prices. And this region definitely needs that. To have partner as strong as MU Health and Boone come together would have been very beneficial. But both sides also had principles by which they were guiding the negotiations. And ultimately, we decided that it was best for us to take a pause, not a complete cessation, but a pause to say, let's explore other opportunities. Let's explore options that we have and then come back later when we both feel that we have a better understanding of each other and go back to the same principle of providing high quality, affordable health care for Boone County and Mid-Missouri.
You know what happens in many other places that would be similar to Columbia, where you would have an education hospital and one that serves a broad region, because people who are from Missouri and especially from Central Missouri know of the University of Missouri Healthcare and the hospital there. And the same thing with Boone Hospital. But you know what is working in other communities. Do you see that this is something with great potential when you would put two entities like this together as working together?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think being an academic health center, we recognize the value of the education of next generation of doctors. But also combined with that, the outstanding research that we can do that really pushes the boundaries of medical care. A great example of that is the BioJoint Institute that we have at the university. That was made possible because of the research of our faculty members in both medicine, orthopedics, as well as vet medicine to come up with some very innovative solution. But at the core of healthcare, we should be always considering the patient-centered experience. Mm-hmm. And that's what we value. And we also know that Boone Hospital values that as well. And the future of healthcare will really require consolidation so we can drive down costs, create greater efficiencies that can benefit the community.
Help us understand, what was the intensity of the negotiations or the conversation? And by that, I don't mean like in one particular afternoon, mm-hmm. how was it being held? I'm talking about when you look at this over the last several months, what kind of effort was put in? How many people were involved? How often were they meeting? What kind of nitty-gritty was there?
I believe that during the past, I guess, 18 months, even before I joined, mm-hmm. the negotiations have been very intense in terms of duration as well as topics that were discussed, because it does affect the future of healthcare in Boone County. During the past 10 months, I know that many of us, including leaders at the university, including Alexander Cartwright, the chancellor, as well as members of the board of curators, were involved in discussions. We had a trip together with Boone representatives to go out to Indiana to see the examples that they had in combining a community-based hospital as well as an academic health center to see how they were able to arrive at their success.
Mm-hmm. So what is the chance you think that there would be future negotiations, that the pause button would be taken off pause and back into play?
I feel very confident. There are many strong supporters of a potential partnership, including our outstanding curator, John Sunvold, who's worked tirelessly on this effort. And we believe that we are very committed to benefiting Boone County. We live in Boone County. This is our county, and the benefits that we can provide to the citizens of Boone County is something that's central part of our mission as a land-grant university.
You know, the question that I'm most eager to ask about on this particular topic is, what became the stumbling block?
I believe the stumbling block was really based on the principles by which we entered a negotiation to say that these are the core principles of a land-grant university with an academic focus. and trying to marry that with a organization that had a different set of principles, all for the same good, and just trying to marry those two in this time period.
Interesting, because you probably heard those, and we heard them on this radio station, because there are many people who are very dedicated to Boone Hospital Center. And so they were afraid of it becoming an arm of a teaching hospital where there would be that aspect to it. I hear what they are saying about that. You seem to understand what they're saying about that. How do you speak to people who would say, well, I don't want my hospital to become a teaching hospital because then I'm more of a specimen for a class to look at than I am a respected patient? I'm right. Exaggerating this a bit, right. But there are many people who would have felt that.
And I've heard that as well. Yeah. And the response back is, we understand why you feel that way. But as a university hospital system that has grown tremendously in terms of our quality, in terms of our efficiency, in terms of our outcomes that we provide, if we were to have individuals who feel that way to come and take a look and experience for themselves the type of care that we provide in an academic medical health center setting, they will be very impressed. And also to keep in mind that we live in a state with 99 counties out of 114 counties that have health disparities based on access to primary health care. As the largest producer, trainer of medical doctors in the state of Missouri in a public setting, we need to continue to train medical doctors, and it's a wonderful way to both train medical doctors as well as provide the outstanding care from our physicians.
Thank you very much for talking about that subject. Let's move on to another subject. And I'll remind my listeners that President of the University of Missouri System, Moon Choi, is our guest. The other thing that came out yesterday was, and this is one of the things that I was planning on asking you about, the process of evaluating all of the programs. I thought the comment, and I may not find this quickly enough to be able to quote it, but in the release that came from the University of Missouri yesterday, and I do have it, the provost of the MU campus in Columbia, Garnett Stokes, said, "We want to explore innovations for our campus that drive excellence. We will do things differently from any other higher education institutions. We are taking a critical look at every academic program and administrative function." And you asked the four campuses to do that. I mean, that was a crucial thing of your saying, if we're going to live in a time where funds for higher education in this state are tight, we better have looked at everything we offer and make sure that it's valuable. So they're doing what you've asked them to do. So your reaction to yesterday, kind of, which was a phase one or stage one announcement.
That's right. It's a stage one. And we are living in a period where the diminishing support from the state has come to be expected. And we now have to react. We can sit back and just complain about the cuts that we're receiving or find ways for us to create a stronger university in response. Nobody likes cuts. I would much rather have a situation where we make continued investments in higher education, because that's an investment in the future. But given the situation that we're facing with cuts from the state, as well as our inability to increase our own revenue because of Senate Bill 389, we have to look for efficiencies. We found many efficiencies during the past year that resulted in almost $100 million of reallocation within the system. But there are some additional efficiencies to be had. But as we go through this process, whether it's the academic portfolio review or the administrative review, we're going to be doing it in a thoughtful process to look at everything into context and to evaluate which programs are performing well, but also at the same time, getting the feedback from the community. And I really appreciate Provost Stokes as well as Chancellor Cartwright in laying out a very thoughtful process. This was stage one of that process. We've not made any decision as a university which programs to eliminate. Now the second phase begins, where we get input, additional data. There may be additional programs that we decide to cut that's not on that list. Some of those programs that are on the list, we may decide not to cut because there are other intrinsic values beyond just looking at the numbers that the committee looked into.
When I look at the list, and I think anybody who looks at the list, they're saying, well, first of all, maybe I didn't realize that there was a PhD program in this. Maybe it would affect one or two persons, which is in that person's career and in that person's study, and that's a lot. I mean, because it affects him or her exactly and specifically. But I think as you look at that list, many who are outside the academic community would say, How could those have been existing now? Why hadn't this been done earlier? Is there a reaction to that? Or is there something that says that once something is offered, it is hard to stop offering that?
I believe that that such a comprehensive and rigorous process of evaluating programs based on performance, based on metrics, has not been done frequently enough at not only at Mizzou, but many universities. And this is a time for us to now say, how do we move forward, given the urgency that we have because of the budget cuts and so forth, for us to thrive, not just survive, thrive in this environment. But some of those programs that I see, for example, in chemical engineering, biochemistry, medicinal pharmacology, and physiology, there may be opportunities for us to be able to combine with other programs that exist. Fields have changed over the past 10, 20 years. There are new fields that are emerging. And so we're trying to also find ways that we can support the students who are in these programs that may be phased out into other programs that are similar.
Next up, you're going to start looking at, or in the process now of looking at undergraduate programs and undergraduate. Right. I thought it was interesting because I've scanned through, I think the report is about 39 pages long, and I scanned through that and I looked pretty quickly at it. And I know some of the suggestions that the task force gave towards the end was that there are some places where there is so much overlap. And this would be in undergraduate programs or maybe in graduate programs when it has to maybe the principles of research or some basic type of thing that might exist in several different places on the campus. And I think the question is a good one. Why couldn't it be melded together into one offering? Because the content of what you end up researching may be different, but the strategies may be the same.
And that's a really good point. And I come from a university in Connecticut that had several different types of introduction to statistics programs, whether a person was in sociology, in psychology or education, or even in engineering. The core concepts were very similar, but there were some examples and also extrapolations that were needed based on the disciplines in which students were studying. I think there are opportunities for us to really collaborate in that regard. You know, we always ask our students as administrators and faculty to be more innovative, try new things. And we're going to be asking all of us, including administrators and faculty, to embrace the same philosophy. Let's try new things. Let's see how we can be more innovative by collaborating.
I think one of the other suggestions was rather than do a 5-year timetable is to do it yearly. And I think that is kind of interesting suggestion also that might challenge some to say every year, let's look at what we're offering. Every year, let's take a peek at that. I don't think you would make a yearly decision or based on 1 year of evaluation, but you would look at trends that way and maybe be able to react quicker. Is that one of the points also?
It really is. And it really goes to the heart of why we need a very comprehensive way of assessing institutional effectiveness and to use data, use business intelligence to drive and also guide and drive how we operate as a university. And I believe that we need to do that on a quarterly basis, not just on an annual basis, so that we can understand where the trends are heading. So we don't have to wait 5 years before making some critical decisions that are needed.
This is a question that I think several who would be maybe from the business community or just looking at it from the outside would say, once the evaluations are done and once you say we are inactivating this program or we're going to do something to combine, when do you convince the general citizenship of the state and of the area that we've reached a point where right now we are there? We are there. And then my second question to that is, when you reach that point, will there be enough savings to say to everyone, well, we will survive strong without any increased state funding, and we will be able to keep our tuition increases less also? In other words, will there be enough savings when you reach this point that you'll be able to say, we've finished We know it. And here are our savings. And this is what it means in the long term.
Let me begin by sharing that we understand the reasons for the cuts to higher education and other very critical services in the state. It is the state's financial situation that is driving those decisions. We recognize that. But at the same time, we've always stated that we can't cut our way to excellence. And the Missouri higher ed, if we were to evaluate based on comparisons to other states, has been funded at a low level, very low level. And on the FTE basis, I believe that the dollar amount during the past few years has been about $170. Our border states, states like Kansas, Arkansas, spend significantly higher amounts. So in many ways, we have been very fiscally responsible, as well as the fact that during the past 10 years, our tuition at all of our campuses in the state of Missouri increased at CPI, while states like Tennessee and Kentucky have seen increases that are three times CPI during that period. So we've been very good fiscal stewards. When you ask, when are we going to reach a point where we say enough is enough? I believe we're there now. And with all of the efficiencies that we have, it's not only to cover the deficits that we expect from the state, but also we want to make investments in scholarships. We want to make investments in providing merit raises for our faculty and staff who've not received them for the past several years. And they are doing an outstanding job with additional workload that has come from layoffs or non-renewals of faculty. We need to recognize them. They are the heart and soul. So I am making a strong case, as well as all of our chancellors, to say to the legislators, and I'm getting some sympathetic nods from them, to say, we've suffered enough. Now, how can we help support your initiatives? But they're also saying, we want you to be good fiscal stewards and be accountable. And that we can assure.
Seems like you're setting the stage for that through this process with the task force. What you're basically being able to say is to go back to those who would be deciding on funding in Jefferson City and say, we have acted in good faith. Here's what we have done. Here we can document what we have done. Now we still ask for your help.
That's right. And I think that's a very good message. And part of that has already happened. With the big cuts that Mizzou has endured during the past year, they were able to pull even more resources from central operations and units to put into programs like the land-grant scholarships to provide those students who are Pell recipients an opportunity to study at the University of Missouri. And this is a major change that affects not only new Pell recipient students, but existing Pell recipient students and students who come from community colleges. Mm. That's a major investment that was made by the chancellor and the provost and the team.
University of Missouri System President Moon Choi is our guest, and we're talking about a couple of the matters that just happened within the last day, and one had to do with the negotiation between MU Healthcare and Boone Hospital Center. And now we're talking about the work that is being done by the group that is the MU Task Force on Academic Program Analysis, Enhancement, and Opportunities. You mentioned a while ago the Senate bill that has capped tuition increases for the public institutions in this state. How do you respond to those who would say, well, you know what, if they get away with that cap, that's just going to give the universities a chance to jack up the tuition? They're afraid of that happening.
That's right.
Explain the necessity of being able to have a little bit of more control over your funding and your future.
Right. So the position that we have at the University of Missouri is for us to receive relief from Senate Bill 389, not a repeal. We believe that a cap is appropriate, but the current cap of CPI cannot keep up with our ability, with our need to have investments that we need in the academic enterprise. And so we do agree that eliminating the cap completely may lead to unintended consequences, where some universities may decide to increase tuition at such a high rate that it causes very significant concern to those students who are continuing their education, or those students who are considering attending our university. And by the way, we also have a board of curators that will need to approve any increase in tuition, even if the cap were increased through Senate Bill 389.
we get locked into what's happening locally. So how could you explain, how has the increase in tuition, and again, this is something that's fairly new here because you've come from elsewhere and just within the last year, but how has the increase in tuition at the University of Missouri system compared to those of public institutions elsewhere over the last 5 to 10 years?
So if we look at the rate of increase of tuition for all states in the United States during the past 10 years, University of Missouri ranks at the bottom five. So we were 45th during that period. And there were universities like University of Arizona, which has increased tuition up by about 70 to 80%. University of Missouri is nowhere near that because we were capped at CPI. So we were, I believe completely that we provide a high quality, affordable education. And that's a commitment that we have going forward. We are not going to place the burden of the budget cuts on the backs of our students and their parents. That's not our approach. But we do need relief to be able to provide the necessary resources. Now, without getting relief from Senate Bill 389, we could still operate the university. But it would mean that there would be less faculty members, there would be larger sections, and also less sections for students to matriculate into and graduate on time, which also extends the cost of education.
Anybody who's tried to fill out a schedule and see the availability of classes know exactly what you're talking about. Gosh, how do you explain the antagonism that exists towards higher education? I'm not talking just the University of Missouri, but I will say this, that I took a call earlier this week from a person. I jotted down some things as he was talking, and he uses the phrases never held accountable, billion-dollar annuity that the university is sitting on, or the university has raised tuition to exorbitant rates. You've already answered these, especially on the last one about the tuition increases in this state are not high compared to nearly every other state in this union. But and you've also addressed the point of never held accountable. I mean, that's why the task force is working right now. But you know that attitude exists out there. How do you work with that in your addresses to those who are outside of the academic field?
For me, I think it is one of my responsibilities to speak with the public, speak with parents of our students, to talk about the value of higher education. And for me, that value is undeniable, especially at a public university, especially at a land-grant university like Mizzou. And if we compare the value of an education at the high school level versus a college level, it becomes very apparent. For a high school graduate, the median wage is about $500, $700 per week. And the unemployment rate for those with just a high school degree is 5% currently. But for college graduates, the weekly wage is about $1,200. $1,200 plus the unemployment rate stands at about 3%. So when you do the math, you can see the value of that additional education. And that increase in stipend goes up with additional education. But also, very importantly, we must recognize that there are consequences for not having higher education. And recently, there was a study performed by two sociologists on the value of higher education and the health disparity. During the period between 1998 and 2015, there has been an increase of 230 deaths per 100,000 for women, white women, with just a high school degree. During that period, same period, for those white women with bachelor's degree, there was a decrease of about 50 deaths per 100,000. So higher education and the attainment of higher education can also reduce the health disparities and the health outcomes. And that was a dramatic study. And I share those types of information with the public and parents of students who may question the value of higher education. And that's the same value that I share with my own children as well.
And the accountability then is college-educated, college graduates living better, living longer, and being more productive, and being better contributors to society. I would say that's where you have to measure the accountability then oftentimes with colleges and universities.
That's right. And those who don't attend college are not, in many cases, are not doing it by choice. But it's about access. It's about not having the ability to pay for college. Those who are the in the lowest socioeconomic strata of our society, who are in the who are Pell Grant recipients, may not have the $6,000 per year that's needed for the unmet need, the need between the cost of education and the Pell Grants that come in. That's why the land grant scholarship that's been implemented at Mizzou that'll start in 2018 makes such a great difference. We're saying to them, if you have the qualifications to come into Mizzou, regardless of your financial status, we will make sure that you'll get a high-quality education.
How excited are you about your days?
I'm very excited. You know, my days are very long, like many administrators who work at the university. And sometimes I go to bed thinking, wow, that was a tough day that I had. But I get up each morning refreshed because I know that what my responsibility is to provide a great education for our students, support our faculty members in their research and teaching endeavors, and making a difference to the citizens of Missouri. So I get very excited about that.
You might have known I was going to ask you this question. I want to squeeze this in. I probably should hold it off to the next time. Who or what has been the biggest influence on what you do and how you conduct your work now as a president of a four-campus university system?
Well, I work very closely with the Board of Curators, but also I work closely with students, faculty, and staff. And I get a lot of great advice from all of them. But I've also learned a great deal about Missouri by talking to the common people. Whether I run into them at the diner or visit them at the Rotary Clubs, I'm getting a lot of good advice about what it means to be a Missourian. What are the values that we should embrace as a university to train the next generation?
Well, I was impressed before we got on the air that you actually knew of the pear tree in my hometown of Macon.
Yes.
So that's a good job. You have done your homework then if you've been able to know of that restaurant. I look forward to another opportunity to talk to you sometime down the road because I think what you have to say is very important for the community and for the state. So thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
President of the University of Missouri System, Moon Choi, has been our guest on KFRU.